Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kurt Eichenwald, who is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair and a New York Times bestselling author. He previously worked as a reporter at the New York Times for more than 20 years and is a two-time winner of the George Polk Award for Excellence in Journalism and was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2000 and 2002. His second book, The Informant, was made into a major motion picture starring Matt Damon. And his latest book just out is 500 Days, Secrets and Lies in the Terror Wars. And here's an article at the New York Times, The Deafness Before the Storm. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kurt Eichenwald.
Thanks for having me.
And just to touch on your article, I spoke yesterday with a FBI special agent who tried to warn about the impending terror attack before 9/11 involving Zacharias Moussaoui in Minnesota. She testified before the Senate about lapses in intelligence prior to 9/11. But your article has brought to light stuff that's extremely necessary, and it's extraordinary that 11 years after it, we still don't know the full picture. And of course, in the absence of having the full picture of what happened prior to 9/11, the conspiracy theorists have filled the void to some extent. So could you walk us through some of these extraordinary briefs and memos that you uncovered from the CIA that were prior to the famous or infamous August the 6th brief titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S.?
Well, to understand all this, you actually have to start with the August 6th, what's called the Presidential Daily Brief. And it's the thing that's presented to the president, and they go over it, you know, every day, as it's named. That document was the sole document that was released by the Bush White House in 2004 when they were being pressured by the 9/11 Commission to let the public see what the president was told and when. This was the only one. And when it was released, Condoleezza Rice, who at that time I believe was the National Security Advisor, or she may have already passed over to being Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice said, well, this is just a historical document. If we had allegations of an actual threat, we would have done something, but this was just a historical document. Some people belittled that, but when you read it, it really was a historical document. It was a backgrounder on bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And it was also a red herring, because I have now seen all the other presidential daily briefs that were not released. And these were things that were presented to George Bush beginning in the late spring of 2001. And in truth, when you look at the August 6th memo in and of itself, yes, it's a historical document. When you look at it in the context of everything else that was going on, it was a plea. It was a plea by the intelligence community saying, please do something. They started on May 1st of 2001, there was a presidential daily briefing where George Bush was told that there was a group of terrorists in the United States, a group of al-Qaeda terrorists in the United States who were planning an operation. In the months that followed, weeks and months that followed, he was told that there were going to be mass casualties, that this had been underway for some time, that they first expected it to be in July, that it had been postponed and was going to be coming later, but it was still in operation. In July, they said it's weeks, it's months, possibly weeks away. And it was this drumbeat of there is an attack coming. The reaction was so limited that by July 9th, members of the Counterterrorist Center at the CIA were having a meeting in the basement of the CIA headquarters, and one of them said, we need to put in for a mass transfer because this thing is coming, it's going to be really bad, nobody's going to do anything to stop it, and we're going to be the ones who are blamed. And the senior officer in the room said, there's nobody who can take our place right now. We're the most qualified people to ride this thing down. So it gives you a sense of how both the magnitude of what the White House was being told and the frustration on the part of the people who were telling it And then, you know, the postscript to all this is after 9/11 happened and there were challenges to the Bush administration about, you know, why didn't you do something? Their response was, well, the CIA didn't give us enough information. And that, you know, among all of the crimes of 9/11, you know, that was one of them, to basically attack the people who were right, knowing that they couldn't respond.
Again, I'm speaking with Kirk Eichenwald, who is the author of the new book just out, 500 Days, Secrets and Lies in the Terror Wars, and he also has an article at the New York Times, The Deafness Before the Storm. Now, since I spoke with Colleen Rowley yesterday, I've got a blizzard of mail from 9/11 truthers, and every time you present real evidence about the incredible, irresponsible recklessness of the Bush administration in recklessly endangering the United States and ignoring these extraordinary warnings that you've uncovered from CIA briefs, that only feeds into that delusion that somehow, you know, these geniuses, Bush and Cheney and Rice, managed to convince a bunch of Arabs to fly into a building, into a bunch of buildings in order to rescue their failed presidency, when in fact the real story is that these leaders should be pilloried for what they failed to do. That was their responsibility. And to some extent, to my mind, the 9/11 truthers are the Bush cover-up.
The truthers are despicable, and, you know, they really need to go get a life. You know, the truthers are the left's version of the birthers, and they're just as reasonable and just as logical. And my hope is that someday they just all go away, because they make it virtually impossible for those of us who are actually, you know, interested in figuring out what the real history is to lay it out. I mean, you know, a big example of this, I write about these documents. I write, here is what Bush says. And immediately yesterday, Ari Fleischer, the former spokesman for the White House spokesman, comes out and says, well, Eichenwald's just a 9/11 truther, you know, and that becomes the theme of the conservative Twitterati who, rather than say, let's look at history, wow, here's another element of history, see everything through a political lens. It makes it very difficult to do history when there are people out there who are doing delusion.
Well, again, they, to my mind, they really operate as the cover-up team for George W. Bush. And I'm grateful that you've been able to put some stuff on the record about what Bush, Cheney, and Rice and company are really concerned about, is that the American people focusing in on how badly they screwed up and how culpable they are for this attack.
It's, you know, one of the things that people will sometimes conclude, and I want to make sure I say this, is that, well, here they had this information, and all they had to do was X, and 9/11 wouldn't have happened. Even if they acted on it, it's not clear that 9/11 wouldn't have happened. I mean, there was a precedent for what they should have done. You know, the same type of hair-on-fire kind of intelligence was coming in December of 1999, and the entire government went on alert. And, you know, the CIA counterterrorist group had, you know, with the authorization of the director, blew through 9 months of its budget in 15 days. You had every single embassy on high alert. You had every single asset of the CIA and the FBI and the Coast Guard and the rest working on this. You had customs brought in. You had, you know, it was virtually unprecedented. And they stopped terrorist attacks. They were coming. They stopped them around the world. There were some in Indonesia. There were some in Pakistan. There were some, and you just go down the list. And there was one in the United States. And the problem with that event, in a sort of a twisted way, is that it worked. And so people don't remember the Millennium attacks that never happened. And so when you hear, well, Bush had all this information, and one response is he could have stopped 9/11, which, I don't know that we can say that. And the other is, well, what could he have done? And the answer to the second question is he could have done what we've already seen worked. He could have put the government on high alert, but he didn't. And, you know, if you go back to that time, what were they spending their time on? They were talking about China. They were spending time on Russia. They were spending time on, of course, Iraq. And, you know, ultimately, they were returning to the old style foreign policy of, you know, national security is about other countries. And you know, the Republicans have been out of office for 8 years. And during that time, the whole concept of what's called transnational threats, meaning organizations that are not linked to any particular country but present a national security threat, developed from 92 to 2001. And they just weren't on board with understanding the changed nature of the national security circumstances faced by the United States.
Well, Condoleezza Rice was selling Star Wars as the panacea. That was that was her main national security focus. Ashcroft had put terrorism at the bottom of the threat list for the FBI. And as you've pointed out in your article in the New York Times, Kurt Eichenwald, The Deafness Before the Storm, it was the neocons in the Pentagon who told the White House that the CIA had been fooled and that bin Laden was merely pretending to be planning an attack to distract the administration from Saddam Hussein, which was their obsession. So, again, I just wish some of these people had been held to account. I mean, the neocons have never been held to account for the disaster that Iraq was and the extent to which Iran was the winner of the Iraq War. Again, you know, I mean, I'm not suggesting that you can make an ironclad case that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice and company could be put on trial. But if you combine all the evidence that you've brought to the table from this recent CIA briefs that have not been declassified, and then their attitude towards Clinton, who was desperately trying to warn them, and, you know, the old adage, I understand, was ABC, anything but Clinton. They just simply ignored it because it came from Clinton. There's a whole history here of kind of arrogance that is breathtaking.
It was. And, I mean, the furthest I would go with all this, and it's the word I used in the piece, and it was a very much discussed word as to what the right word is. The word was negligence. The Bush administration in 2001 acted with severe negligence. And, I don't have to explain the reason why, because you just named it. It was arrogance. It was an arrogance that nobody had anything to say that was worth hearing if it wasn't what they already believed. And, like I said, there's no way to know if 9/11 could have been stopped or would have been stopped if we had done what we should have done. But the probabilities that it would have stopped or that it would not have happened are certainly higher had we done something rather than had we done nothing.
Again, I'm speaking with Kurt Eichenwald, who's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair and a New York Times bestselling author. He previously worked as a reporter at the New York Times for more than 20 years and is a two-time winner of the George Polk Award for Excellence in Journalism and was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2000 and 2010. His latest book just out is 500 Days, Secrets and Lies in the Terror Wars, and he has an article at the New York Times, The Deafness Before the Storm. So let's turn to the book and it is such a tragedy that this 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch, in as much as it brought out kind of the worst. I mean, I don't think we could have had a worse president. I mean, all those people, for example, on the left who say back in 2000 there was no difference between Bush and Gore, well, in retrospect, there had to be a huge difference. I don't think we would have had an Iraq war. We certainly would have had 9/11, probably, according to what we've just discussed, but maybe we wouldn't. We don't know that.
But it's the old thing, if things were different, would they have been the same? There's
exactly.
No way to know.
There's no way to know, but I think there's no question that we were wrong-footed from day one. I mean, here you had an attack in the heart of New York, where the international community is headquartered at the United Nations, and the first thing Bush did was go it alone. When the entire world had enormous sympathy to the United States, he just gave them the back of his hand.
Well, I wouldn't say from day one things were completely done incorrectly. I think they did do some things that were smart, but they were distracted from day one. Iraq came to the fore, and it was, you know, we really need to be dealing with Iraq. Iraq is involved in this. And it was, you know, assertions looking for fact to back them up, and there was none. It was ridiculous on its face. I mean, you had people there did not know or remember, or probably did not know, I would stick with that, that bin Laden declared war on Saddam Hussein in 1990. They didn't understand that Saddam was a secularist, and that bin Laden, and in particular Zawahiri, his second in command, was dedicated to the overthrow of secularist governments in the Middle East, and instead bringing in fundamentalist governments. You know, so the idea that these two were working together was ridiculous from the get-go, and it was very hard for the intelligence people to deal with that, because it would be as if I said, you know, when I walk home, I'm walking on the roof. And you could sit there and marshal as much evidence as you want that it's not true, but it's like, no, I'm walking on the roof. And if you have people who want to believe something, you can't change their minds. And that served to be a very damaging distraction. And on top of that, you know, it led us into a war that we never should have been in. The intelligence to support the whole weapons of mass destruction idea, flawed is the nice term, I will say, wasn't there. And, you know, it was only there if you sliced it and diced it and picked and chose, you know, what you wanted to prove. And using that standard, you could prove that water cures cancer. You know, and in the end, that was the key to the recklessness, the things that went really, really badly. You know, the soldiers are great. The soldiers are the most impressive people you'll ever meet. And they hate the Pentagon. The Pentagon made unbelievable number of mistakes in all of this, and holds a far higher level of responsibility for many things that went wrong than I think is generally understood.
So when you talk about the Pentagon, Kirk Aichmoller, you're also talking about Rumsfeld, are you not?
Rumsfeld, second in command, Wolfowitz.
The guy that on day one, when the plane finally landed, Air Force One, when they finally had their first meeting after 9/11 at Camp David, said it was all about Iraq, right?
It was all about Iraq. You had another guy, Douglas Feith, and one of the things that is in 500 Days that, you know, one of these mouth-dropping moments, and I think this speaks enormously to what was going on there. Douglas Feith, very high guy in the Pentagon, writes a memo in the earliest days after 9/11, before we've gone into Afghanistan, before we've really done anything, and his suggestion is that we should strike not Afghanistan, not Iraq, but a country in Latin America. And with the idea being, we have declared war on terrorism, and if we did this, we would surprise terrorists everywhere. Well, yeah. It also surprised them if we bombed Detroit. You know, and the idea that you'd go into a country that had nothing to do with anything sort of shows how far askew the thinking on some of this stuff was. And so, you know, these people were unfit for the offices they held. In fact, one of the scenes that's laid out that I think is really very powerful in the book is the highest levels of the British government. Tony Blair is meeting with his intelligence staff and his military staff. And they're sitting there talking about how Rumsfeld's incompetent. He's keeping information not only from people who needed to know, but also from the president. They had their own sort of spy in the circumstances and knew that that the people in the Pentagon were not acting in the interest of the White House, and they were greatly distressed that Bush was going to be making decisions that they feared were going to be based on partially fed information that wasn't accurate.
Well, because these clowns in the Pentagon, their whole Iraq plan was based upon their chosen and anointed Chalabi, who all along was working for the Iranians. I mean, it's breathtaking when you catalog some of the stuff in your new book, Kurt Ockenwald, 500 Days, Secrets and Lies in the Terror Wars. You know, you really are getting a picture here of the gang that couldn't shoot straight. President Bush mistakenly issued an unplanned international policy announcement during a critical speech at the United Nations because his staff loaded the wrong speech into the teleprompter. You mentioned the Tony Blair stuff. Also, Bush's phone call to Chirac of France trying to get him to join in the war, where he tells Chirac that the Iraq war was willed by God and had been foretold in biblical prophecy. Then, of course, the famous anthrax attacks that involved Bruce Ivins, who took the FBI forever to find because he was working with the FBI, and nobody bothered to look at a psych evaluation that the guy was nuts. I mean,
right. I mean, yeah, when you start to lay out all the things that happen, somebody said that the book reads like a thriller, but if it was fiction, no one would believe it. And it's true. There were things, you know, the full story of 9/11 and the events that took place afterwards have not been known up until now. And the magnitude of what happened and some of the horrific mistakes that happened, it's also some of the very smart things that were done, are the catalog is very long. And, you know, I think because people have been very sensitive about, you know, the emotional scar of 9/11, there really hasn't been a full depiction of what we did and how we handled it. And in fact, you know, right off the bat, the book came out and people were saying, oh, it's, you know, unfortunately, it was all conservatives were saying how insensitive it was to have a book like this. And it's ridiculous. It's like, you know, it's like saying in 1956 we couldn't write a history of Pearl Harbor. This has to be known. People have to understand what happened. And we have to understand what happened because that is the essence of how we protect ourselves in the future.
Well, Kurt Ockenwald, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Kurt Ockenwald, who's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair and a New York Times bestselling author. He previously worked as a reporter at the New York Times for more than 20 years and is a two-time winner of the George Polk Award for Excellence in Journalism and was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2000 and 2002. His second book, The Informant, was made into a major motion picture starring Matt Damon, and his latest book just out is 500 Days, Secrets and Lies in the Terror Wars. He also has an article at the New York Times, The Deafness Before the Storm. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.